Hello, Internet. It's Tori. You're listening to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. For updates on when episodes go live, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. To join the discussion, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/CosmereCast, where you'll find an invitation to our Discord server. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Mike. Joining me this week are Craig.
Everybody, hello.
Dave?
Don't you usually do Craig first?
And Tori.
Hello, Internet.
And we start a week with good Craig, so Thing, what's your Craig this week?
Oh, sorry, Thing's not here, so I guess I'll have to talk for it. Hi guys, how's it going?
Hey.
All right, so real quick, my good thing this week will be a little series that my friend got me into. He's just like, hey, watch this series. I'm like, okay, and it's fun. It's a BBC series called Ghosts, and it's like Beetlejuice without the Beetlejuice, which I guess might be bad, but the whole idea is, you know, ghosts haunt this, I guess, mansion or something. And the main character can see them and interact with them. And it's a comedy. It's all in good fun. They interact and shenanigans happen.
Is that Bruce Willis movie?
No, not Ghost, Ghosts. That's
Patrick Swayze. The other Bruce Willis movie.
Oh,
the
Sixth
one,
Sense.
It is
a little bit like Sixth Sense. Yeah.
That Patrick Swayze movie starring Bruce Willis.
Anyway.
I love how you just assumed that I was wrong at first.
So,
you were playing the odds. I can't blame you.
As I was saying, it's a comedy. It has lots of awkward situations because the main character can see the ghosts and therefore interact with them, but no one else can. So, you know, she's interacting with them and stuff, and it's awkward. So that's always in good fun. Apparently, they're bringing it to the U.S. because they remake everything in the U.S. No idea if that's going to be bad or good, but you can just watch the BBC one. So go do that. We were watching it on HBO, the HBO Now Go. I forget what it's called, but we have a streaming through HBO. So we were watching it on that. So there you go. Done. Ghosts.
All right. Dave, Thing Good.
My good thing this week is a renowned content creator, and he goes by the name of James Rolfe. You might recognize his most popular character. You might recognize his most popular character, the Angry Video Game Nerd. And I think that the show is clever enough to excuse the crassness. I actually frequently go back and watch some old episodes and the new ones too. He still puts out an episode every week or month, and they're still pretty good. I'm not buckling over in laughter like I did when I was like 20 years old watching him, but there's always at least one thing in every episode that makes me laugh out loud, you know, things that are actually clever. So I appreciate it. And If you don't happen to know this and you're listening to our podcast with your children and your family and your ears that don't want to hear cussing and stuff, you probably know, but Angry Video Game Nerd and James Rolfe in general are by no means family friendly. So just be warned about that. And whether or not you actually enjoy James Rolfe's content, you really have to appreciate his place in internet history. He was basically made a full-time living on YouTube 10 years before YouTube existed, and, you know, was one of the pioneers that paved the way for online content creators to actually be able to do their work full-time and get paid for them. So hats off to you, James Rolfe. I appreciate all the work you've done.
So
he's also like the nicest guy ever, like in real life.
Yeah.
He's apparently a really stand-up bloke, unlike his nerd character and Board James character.
Like, I'm not really a fan of crassness and everything, and I still enjoy Angry Video Game Nerd just because of.
But there's clever stuff in it too. There's clever stuff in it too. It's not just
there
about crassness.
Clever stuff, yeah.
And there's quality filmmaking. Like, I mean, I'm sure Mike can speak to the filmmaking aspect and the art of effects and things way better than I can. And I don't know if he has anything to weigh in on.
If I had watched any Angry Video Game Nerd any time in the last decade, I totally could weigh in here, but I haven't.
Sounds like you should, Mike. Honestly, his latest stuff in this past year has been really good. I felt like the quality has improved. I don't usually care for the little skits that he does sometimes, but that's sort of rare that he does one anymore. But there was, if you watch some of his older stuff, there's going to be like a 2-3 minute segment that's him pooping in a cartridge or something stupid. You could skip that. But, you know, when he's actually playing the game and stuff like that, no, it's there's just something.
His actual insights and critiques of the games, if
right,
you
yeah,
whittle the shows down to just that, are pretty entertaining in themselves.
All right. So, Mike thing, do a good. My good thing this week is, unlike Dave's disgusting, crass, dookie words thing, mine is completely family-friendly. John Wick, totally
yes,
family-friendly.
Because when someone says family-friendly, that is the first thing I think of.
I mean, I watched it with my family, so...
Gather up the kids.
Gather up the puppies, because that's...
It's a... Yeah, just gather everybody up. It's a beautiful tale of a man and his dog, and a lot of guns, and murdering just so many people.
It is just, quite good. I agree.
It's such a good movie, and it's such a simple premise. But it also, within this extremely good, very simple action movie, there's also more lore than some fantasy novels I've read. And
I think we watched the first movie without... This was before there was so much hype. It's just like, oh, Keanu Reeves, let's, you know, give it a watch. And it was really good.
Like, I would like someone to tell other movies that they are allowed to be this good. Because apparently nobody has. But yeah, John Wick, great movie. Not actually family friendly. Lots of language, lots of violence. Very, very wonderful violence. Tori, what's your good thing?
Well, since we're talking about family friendly things, my good thing...
Tori,
is...
were you even paying attention?
I was, yeah. Wait for it. My good thing is The Witcher, Nightmare of the Wolf, which is a Netflix original movie, animated. It is the story of Vesemir, which is Geralt of Rivia's teacher, I guess is the right word. But so backstory from The Witcher world, and high quality animation right up there with the Castlevania show, and good plot. I liked it. Lots of action, and it's not actually family friendly. There's a lot of blood, a lot of killing. It's very messy. It's very messy. But yeah, good thing. I liked it.
I have two questions for you.
Okay.
The first is it based on one of the stories from the books?
No.
Okay. Number two, does it have more of a focus on witchering than the show did?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I would say it does. Mm-hmm.
Because that was something I felt like the show could have had more of. Just more generalized witchering. Yeah. All right. Dave.
Yeah.
How's it going?
I'm good. How about you guys?
You got to start a new book this week.
Oh, yeah.
Takes place on a completely different planet that we've never seen before.
This one I might actually be able to remember some of.
Yeah, right?
Let's hope.
So, my book that, or our book that we started this week is called Reveille Players. They're the bands of mourning, right? Guys that play the Reveille. Wake you up.
Ha 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 ha.
Yep. That's my only joke for the episode, guys. Have a good night. And that too. Double joke. All right. Something about the Lord Ruler's bracers. That's what the bands of mourning are referring to, according to the back jacket, which I was allowed to read. And now I got to thinking, you know, they said, oh, the bracers had great power in them. But as far as we understood up to this point, they were just the ATM bracers where the Lord Ruler stored his youth. So were they more than that? And also,
he had a lot of different metal.
Yeah, he had a bunch of different ones, but I felt like the main ones were the ATM bracers. And now,
the ones they discussed were the ATM because that's how he stayed alive so long. But that doesn't mean I mean, he was a Furukimus. He could do all the metals.
Right.
Back in the day when Furukimus could do all the metals.
I got to thinking, what metal are the Bands of Mourning made out of? And I don't think I ever found out what Laurasium mines would do, huh? What kind of ferrochemical power can you store in Laurasium? That's
the
my question.
Question of the day.
Yep. And we also know that burning Laurasium would allow a non-invested person to become a Mistborn. So I wonder if there's some kind of similar power to ferrochemical Laurasium. Because, and the other thing is, oh, the Lord Ruler's bracers were these powerful tools. Well, like, so what? No one else can use another person's ferrochemical metals unless these are the exception, or unless there's just something that we don't know yet.
Oh, was that an actual question you were asking us? Because Rafo.
I had a feeling that would be the answer. Yeah. So that's what I'm going to be thinking about over these upcoming weeks, is what ferrochemical power would Laurasium give somebody? And I believe I already, something about groceries. I don't remember. Something about you get the spirits to buy you groceries or something, I think was the first thing that I wrote down, but that's just silly, you guys. That's back when I thought it was titanium or its alloy. All right, that's it for the back cover. Here comes the prologue. Wait, Wax is with his sister? Wait, this is a flashback? Oh, duh. Every episode of Psych starts with a flashback. No wonder Bleeder killed Idashwi. Telson and Asinthew and co. sneak into the Muggle world. Constable... Would Waxthew rather see Forch rot in prison? Bullet time. GG. Here we have Wax back at Ferukimian witchcraft school. And his sister and Idashwi and this other kid, Forch, are going to break out of meditation time and go out on the town and get drunk. And, you know, Wax is like the rule follower. So he's like, I want to be cool, too. Well, really, his sister drags him along. But, you know, he wants to stick him around because he thinks Idashwi is cute. So first side note, I don't remember him knowing Idashwi when we read the second book. Maybe I missed it, or maybe it was just kind of brushed over, or what? Was I supposed to remember from book two that Wax knows Idashwi?
Well, Idashwi was the girl that was killed.
Yeah, they come to her apartment and the first is they were like, oh, who is this steel runner? It could be a common name.
I mean, I agree with you because it felt like he didn't know who that was when they were going after her in the first place. And then it's like, oh, here she is in this when he was 15 years older or something.
Yeah, she also doesn't seem to be really that important to his life. She's just a girl he thought was cute when he was 15.
This was, you know, I don't remember credit. This was 25 years ago for him.
Yeah.
To be fair to him, like, I ran into people I went to school with all the time, and like, we'll have that moment of, did we go to school together? I don't remember. Did you? Yeah. and we have to like talk it out to figure out if we went to school together. So, and Wax at this time is
That's
older
25
than
years.
I am now. So yeah.
So bonus for wearing masks, you can avoid that entirely. Just.
Oh my gosh, yes.
You don't have to talk to anybody if you don't leave your house. All right, then he's about to sneak out of Terrace Camp with his friends. Then a constable shows up, and he wants to go and eavesdrop on the conversation because he sent a tip-off letter to the constables with evidence against Forch for committing arson recently, and wouldn't you know it, that Forch rhymes with torch, and I'm afraid we're starting to approach Dickens-esque levels of appropriate character names between Idashwi, Forch, Steris, like, you know, may as well just call him Oliver Twist or whatever.
Oh, I'd have gone with Batman villains, but yeah.
Batman villains? Like Cobblepot or whatever?
Well, he's the Penguin, because he kind of looks like a penguin. And then there's Mr. Freeze, who freezes stuff. And the Riddler? He leaves riddles.
Oh, you mean their villain names, not their birth names. Okay.
I mean, that is also relevant in some cases.
Scarecrow. He scares crows and people.
Well, like, Mr. Freeze is actually Victor Freeze.
But it's spelled Germanly.
Yes. Like, the Riddler is Edward Nigma. Enigma. Yeah. It's a whole thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, Adam West stole that from Charles Dickens, so whatever. Adam West didn't write Batman.
Or did he?
He rewrote Batman. Okay. So, there's this kid, he likes to burn stuff, and the constable thinks that there will be more dangerous crimes in the near future. And Grandma Terrace Lady, she's like, we police ourselves, get out of here, outsider. And he's like, I'm warning you, here's a bullet to remind you of the last time you let someone go on a killing spree. And then, that's the end of that scene. It's not the end of the scene. She also catches Cynthia, or Wax, if you will, and tells him not to be a snoop or a snitch, and then he slips on the bullet and picks it up and walks away.
So I have a question. How do you pronounce Grandma's name? Because when I read this, I see Telling Dwar, but I know that's not right.
Telling Dwar? I don't actually telling know. Dwar. I didn't write it down. Pretty sure we talked about
that. Was the
pretty sure that episode just came out where we first had this conversation.
Yeah, because she pops up there too. But I just think it's funny. It's Telling Dwar.
Telling Dwar is the teacher.
Oh, not the grand. Sorry, the grandma's. Where is it? It's like a V. Waffendel. Yeah, Waffendel. Sorry. Oh, Telling Dwar is the teacher dude.
Telling Dwar. Yeah, I guess he's a history teacher.
Yeah, Telling Dwar. He talks about the wars. The History Channel used to.
Used to, dude. That's history. So there you have it. Next scene. Don't worry about the killing spree, Cynthia. It was probably just a fluke. Forge rhymes with torch. Where'd that kid come from? Where'd that bullet come from? And how is it not getting pushed into mud? Wax will find his own way. All right, so Wax gets to the meditation camp late. And they, you know, afterward, I forget why he ends up talking to Telling Dwar, but he cons Telling Dwar into giving him information on, like, this. It wasn't, like, a massacre. It was just, well, I don't know. What defines a massacre? It was only one person died. I don't know if that counts as a massacre or not. I'm not an epidemiologist. No one knows. I mean, maybe a single murder could be considered a massacre. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry.
That's a Tory question.
I think it depends on how violent it was.
Okay.
According to Google, I don't know who, the dictionary.com, an indiscriminate and brutal slaughter of people.
So it's not a massacre because only one person died.
Sounds
but still,
like
it was
at least two. Yeah.
It sounds like it needs to be multiple.
So at any rate, there's still
psychopaths already.
There's still a terrible, horrible, awful murder in recent enough history that people still fairly fresh in people's minds, I guess. And there was someone brought in a gun, I think. And that's the purpose of Constable bringing in the bullet there. So Wax goes back to bed and he puts on his urban clothes and he looks out the window and hey, Forge is back early. Where are the girls? Uh-oh. Girls are off getting drunk so that Forge will have an alibi. What's he up to? So Wax jumps out of his window barefoot and follows Forge to this old storage shed, and he goes inside, and there's Forge brandishing a knife standing over some 5-year-old kid, and then there's this fight, and then Wax gets pushed out of a window. So Wax has these steel flakes in his jacket pocket that he just keeps there in his urban clothes, and gets a chance to get like one like tiny little lick out of him, but then, you know, Forge is also a steel pusher as well as a pewter ferrochemist, it seems like, because he grows in size as he taps his metal mines. So yeah, Wax out the window, and he had the bullet in his pocket, which he doesn't remember putting there. A little suspicious, Harmony. And he drops it on the ground and has just enough allomantic power, you know, in his belly to burn it and push off the bullet. And the ground's, like, it's raining really hard, and the ground's, like, all muddy, and I'm kind of questioning how much effect he would get for pushing his momentum upward while pushing on this bullet, but he does kind of, like, nearly break his legs, so he probably didn't get that much out of it anyway. It just was barely enough to save his life, really. And you know, he decides that the right thing to do would be to go in and try to stop Forge himself, because there's no time to grab help from adults. And then there's this other thing where they have this pushing match with the bullet. He throws the bullet and Steel pushes it toward Forge, and Forge stops it inches from his forehead and starts pushing. Wait, if it's at his forehead and he's pushing, wouldn't it go upward? Because the pushing should go from the center of his mass. I'm not going to dissect all this. So anyway, the bullet is made out of three different parts, each made of metal. So Wax focuses on just the explodey part or something, and it blows up. Bullet blows up in Forge's face, and he saves the day or something. And then 28 years later, Wax has one heck of a bachelor party. And that's the end of the prologue.
So you would call that a bachelor party?
I mean, it's fulfilling the function of a bachelor party.
All his friends were there.
Yeah, all the criminals Wayne. And constables and Wayne, yeah. And
Wayne. All right, so...
They go on a raid of some group, some...
He does some crime busting late into the night and morning of his wedding.
Which Craig, Steris told him to go
which
do.
Which Steris told him to do.
Craig, and later when you listen to this, Dave's brother, now you know exactly how to set up Dave's eventual bachelor party when he has that happy day.
By busting crime? And make sure to invite Wayne. Got it.
I don't get it.
Then you will be surprised. What? Chapter 1?
Chapter 1. Wax was married before? Okay, so he obviously had a serious relationship with Leslie. I don't know if it was ever actually mentioned that they were married. And, you know, they did not have like a traditional wedding ceremony. They were kind of putting it off. But they were, you know, like officially man and wife through some, you know, like a quaint ceremony, which is cute. I just don't remember it being mentioned before, but... It's reiterated.
I can't point to you where, but I know it has been mentioned in at least I think the previous book. I don't think it was mentioned in Alloy of Law, but it was definitely mentioned that they were married and that she wanted Leslie eventually wanted to have a big survivorist wedding, but they had a small thing.
She's a survivorist?
Well, it's because they have the fancy churches. So
I guess. I mean, I guess I would expect Payom to be a Pathian, but it's not, maybe not. You know what? No, I'd expect. No, I changed that. Take that back. Payom would be anything but a Pathian, so it makes sense.
At the time, Payom might have been a Pathian, but Leslie could have been a survivorist, you know, just as the role.
I think Payom kind of forsook Harmony the moment she fell in love with Wax, though.
No. So the moment she turned away from Harmony was when she had to kill herself, according to Harmony's wishes, to get him to go back to the city. Like, that was the moment that basically broke her. And she's like, everything was wrong. Like, what she had to do to Wax. That's when it all went wrong. Before that, she was a spy, you know, for Harmony to keep an eye and help out Wax, make sure he survives that whole thing. That was the point. That turning point and how it happened, that was the moment. Can't just ask Wax, hey, I'm tired of being in the rough, so I want to go back to the city. No, no, no. She's got to be shot in the head by Wax himself.
Yeah, I guess Harmony needed Wax back in the city, and that's how Harmony chose to
pretty much the worst
manipulate the situation.
Way.
I don't know if you can say that with certainty, but...
Well, look, so Payom goes crazy, slinks off and goes talks to some other shard or something, comes back and murders a bunch of people. Wax has PTSD and has trouble firing guns sometimes. The person you need as your quote-unquote sword cannot sometimes fire
knife.
A gun if there's a woman
a gun sword
nearby.
What shard did Payom go talk to?
That's a good question, Dave. Remember we asked you.
No, you asked me what shard was the origin of the god metal that we saw at the end of book 2.
Right, and so how did she get that god metal?
I don't know.
Then there you go.
It fell from the sky.
By talking to a third unrelated shard.
Or, you know, Hoyd.
Or Hoyd. But
the shard of Middle
Manning. That's the moment that broke her. I think that was the worst thing Thaze could have done. Like, it was a blunt way to get what you wanted without looking at the repercussions, which is really weird because Stazed should be good at looking into
You're not
future.
Giving him any credit.
No, I'm just a little bitter at this approach.
I think that Wax and Peril make a cute couple, and I wish that they could stay together.
Well, at the time, yes, until she went crazy and started becoming a mass murderer.
I do think Wax and Steris are cute together, but I also feel like Wax doesn't appreciate Steris enough to deserve her. But maybe he will by the end of this book. Speaking of, they're about to get married, right? All right, so Wax was married before, well established, and I guess I didn't realize that he and Lessie actually had a ceremony. 6 months ago, he shot someone. Steris is Wayne's practice audience. Even the other characters know that we're more interested in Wayne, so they continue talking about him. Does Wax wish to back out of the wedding? Ash girls. Harmony went to go play skee ball on the boardwalk. So when Steris was a little girl imagining her wedding day, it had a bunch of random nonsense in it. This wedding is so beautiful, even Steris is crying. This wedding is so beautiful, even the water tower is crying. And that's the end of this week's chapters.
But not the end of this week's chapter. Jokes.
No, that's it. That's all I wrote.
Okay.
So yeah, God is on the Jersey Shore boardwalk playing skee ball. So Akondra has to show up to enlist the help of Wax. And I assume that's where Harmony went. I don't know. I don't know any other works of fiction where God just suddenly disappears to go slack off other than Dogma. So I'm just going to go with that story.
He's gone to play hockey ball.
Preacher. Ball. It's sort of a core aspect of Preacher.
The Mel Brooks movie?
No, the comic book and AMC TV
Why
show.
Why did I say Mel? I meant Mel Gibson because I was thinking of Signs because he was a preacher in that. I said Mel Brooks. That would be a good Mel Brooks movie, I think.
Bruce Willis.
No, different you're thinking M. Night of Patrick Swayze.
Thank you.
Alright. So yeah, they're about to get married and then a water tower falls over and Yakko, Wakko, and Dot pop out and cause all kinds of ruckus. Dude, man! What if Yakko, Wakko, and Dot met Wayne?
What if? What
would Dude, this is like, this is my dream crossover fanfic right now. Miss Born Animaniacs.
I mean, clearly Wayne would be the only one who can keep up the pace with them.
He would be the genre savvy character.
Hanging them lampshades all over the place.
So, I don't know. Well, nothing else happened, right? They're about to get married, then they don't get married. DN. GG. Have a good week, everybody.
Dave's gone play the thing.
What happened, Dave?
Hurdle. Wait, no, Dave's still here. Abort, abort. Does Dave have anything else for us?
I thought Craig was asking me something.
I don't know. Did you mention that there was a conjurer that showed up?
Yeah, that was the whole skee ball thread.
Oh, okay. I might have missed it.
Because
Sorry, I thought
you
we were talking
off
about
playing
God
hockey ball.
All right, bye, everybody.
Bye, Dave.
Oh, I
okay.
Didn't know
Dave's actually gone. Actually play the thing.
This concludes the spoiler-free section of our podcast. If you are, as I am, reading along for the first time, we recommend that you stop listening now, as the following will contain spoilers for not only this book, but for other Cosmere books as well. There may also be general spoilers from any other source material. Spoilers begin now.
Yep, Dave's gone.
All right. First thing we should probably do is get an update from Tori on the diagram, because we didn't last week.
Oh no, I'm not ready for that, you guys.
So the first thing we should do next week is get an update from Tori on the diagram, because we missed that last week.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was gone last week because of a family emergency, and that has still been occupying a lot of my brain space, and you guys are just lucky I'm even here for a podcast today.
So the first thing we should do
okay, Tori.
Is find out what Craig wants to talk about.
Not a lot this week. We get the appearance of Telson, which is Wax's sister. We get to see a little bit of what she's like, and you can tell already that she doesn't necessarily care about the Terra side. You know, she goes to sink off and drink and flirt and do whatever it is that they're doing.
I mean, that doesn't necessarily, like, how you act as a teenager doesn't necessarily reflect the
That's
adult
true.
You're going to become.
But we also know that she's one of the members of the suit, so... We already know she's going to be up to no good eventually.
So Dave's 100% going to call that, right?
I mean, it's very obvious. I would not put money on him missing that. If that statement makes sense, I don't know. But he's got to notice that, guys. Like, I have to say, something we can talk about. Dave was asking some really good questions at the beginning when he was talking about the bands of mourning. Talking about, like, how could someone else use someone else's ferrochemical bracers and that sort of thing. And that's sort of the interesting question that's going to come up, because once we meet the person from the South Scadrial, you get to learn that they've been playing around with identity, like storing identity and what that actually means for a ferrochemical mine when you actually do that. And then you can combine the storage of identity. Let me correct my statement. You can combine that, having someone store identity, they could make a mind that has connection and investiture within it, along with whatever power that you want it to do. And that's how they make those medallions. Like, correct me if I'm wrong here. That might be too many metals, but I think that is how it's done.
I think it's just identityless.
You have to be identityless, because normally when you use a ferrochemical bracer or metal, whatever the heck it is, some mine, when you use some ferrochemical mind, if it takes your identity as well, like your identity is part of that.
Right.
So you have to store your identity to make it have no identity, and therefore anyone can use it.
The Southern Scadrians only figured out how to braid two metals together to get it to work. That's as far as they've gotten, where
right,
the Bands of Mourning are all 16 plus.
Well, okay, I don't
want to
talk
possibly.
About the Bands of Mourning. I'm talking about just the unkeyed metal mines. But specifically, you also have to grant the person tapping it the ability to use that power, because right now, twinborns or even people who have ferrochemical powers, they only have access to one of the metals.
No. You only need to be able to, like, use the ability to store. Because it's identityless, anyone can tap.
Ooh,
that's the point of
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah, see, I don't remember all the details of that. But we're going to get into that, because we're going to get some scenes with that, and then we'll really know the details.
And
I always get confused with how it
For
exactly
some
works.
Reason, you can only use one of them at a time.
Yeah.
Because What's-His-Face has to swap between being able to converse and staying warm.
Right, because it only has one metal, right? Oh, but you can't wear them both. There's something funky going on there.
You can't use both at once. I'm not super sure. Maybe it's because you're tapping, and you can only tap one. No, Sazed could tap a bunch of different metals at once. I don't know. I don't understand that one. Maybe somebody will listen to this episode and then be like, oh, it's really simple. It's because of this. And then they'll post it in our Discord, and then we'll know.
Hey, Mike, where's our Discord? Sorry, Tori, what did you say?
I was going to say, or it gets explained at some point in the novel, and we've just all forgotten about it, and it will be covered later.
Hey, Mike, how does someone get access to our Discord?
Well, you go to patreon.com/CosmereCast, CosmereCast, and you'll find a link to let you join our Discord, which is where all the conversation happens. There's nothing on Twitter. There's nothing on Facebook. I post stuff there, but there's no interaction there. Just Discord.
All right. So according to the Coppermine wiki on Furukami, Unkeyed Metal Mines is a special metal mine with anyone with the relevant ferrochemical ability can access. That's just where there's identity has been stored, so therefore there's no identity tied to that mine. So that's what unkeyed metal mines are. But we also have unsealed metal mines, which is a special kind of metal mine that anyone can access. That's because remember, Marissi also uses the warmth medallion. Like she uses it as well. So it's not like, and she doesn't have access to Furukami. So that is made through using Necrostil, which is stores investiture. Duralumin, which stores connection, and then you have whatever the metal is that you want to actually use of the actual metal mine itself. So I think you need that connection storage, otherwise you won't have connection to be able to use Furukami. You need the connection to preservation, I assume, to something in order to be able to access Furukami.
Okay, I don't remember any of that being explained in the book, so I'm going to keep an eye out for that.
I'm looking forward to that. There's a whole big discussion about it when we actually... I don't even remember the character's name, unfortunately. But I can scroll down in the summary to see. But yeah, he will sort of explain how these work. And that's good. So anyway, the point is, Dave was asking some good questions. Because, like, how does someone use someone else's ferrochemical mine? And that's one of the questions that will get resolved in this book. And the Bands of Mourning are not the Lord Ruler's bracers. That's just what they believe they are at this point. Instead, yeah, this is something made by Kelsier.
They were created by Kelsier. Possibly with Spook's help. Possibly with the help of Southern Skadrians. We don't know.
I don't know a lot about that.
Alec? Is his name Alec? Does that sound
Might
right?
Be. That sounds familiar. Yeah, Alec. You are correct.
Yay, I can read and see a name and take a guess.
I was going to say you remembered something about the book.
Nope. Scrolled down and read the Coppermine summary.
The other big thing is that Wax is going to get married, and he's clearly not ready. And, you know, Dave said it best, that he's basically not quite ready to be with Steris. Like, he's at the halfway point, because he's definitely noticing things about her. Before, like, Alloy of Law, he was just writing her off. Like, she was just a means to get some money, and they were going to have basically a political wedding sort of thing. But now it's like, he knows what she's like a little bit. He notices little quirks and things about her, and that's good. Like, that's a start. And I think as we, you know, read this book and watch their interaction, then you can see that fondness grow into something, which is totally intentional. It's got to be intentional. So I look forward to that, because Steris is best. So I think it's good that they didn't get married yet, because Wax wasn't ready, and that will make it all the better when he finally decides to go through with it. And guys, I know I've said it before, pay attention to scenes where Steris is flying, like when Wax grabs her and she's in the air, because you can see how she reacts to flying. And especially, and we're going to see it in this book, contrast that with Marassi's attitude towards flying. There's going to be one scene in particular where Wax flies both of them, and you can directly compare their reaction. That's coming up in, like, I don't know, like 5 chapters or something. It's real quick. It's in the beginning of the book.
Marcy hates heights. She's not into it.
But Steris, oh, she into it.
If this were a less family-friendly show, I would go into more detail on Steris's reaction.
She's got a case of the vapors. All right, that's all I really had. There's not a lot, because we only have 2 chapters.
I think there's going to be a lot of weeks where we only have 2 chapters.
I mean, but we're at the beginning of the book, so there's not a lot to discuss yet. But I'm glad Dave gave us some pretty good questions, and I think he's going to get a lot of answers to his questions, which is good. I sort of wish we wrote them down, but I guess we could just listen to the show again in the future.
I mean, I'm going to do that.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Because editing. But yeah, I'm good with ending here.
Yep.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
Good night, Internet.
Tune in next week for Tori's diagram update.
Yes, that should happen. Mm-hmm.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
This has been the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at CosmereCast, or like us on Facebook. Our theme music is Traveling Made Up Continents by Gillicuddy, used with permission. Hear more from him at the Free Music Archive. Thanks for listening.